Hello, podcast world, and welcome to the Mint Podcast. We are here with episode 4, and as always, it is the Mint's mission to raise awareness for mental health and reduce the stigma that is attached to it. Here today with me, I have Katie, who has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, or you will hear us refer to it as BPD, for a shorter purpose during this episode. So it is always our goal to reach the next struggling person, and I hope that today we can do that for you. So rather than me introduce Katie, I'm going to let Katie introduce herself. So Katie, welcome. Thank you for being here with me.
Super excited to be a part of this. Seriously.
So give me a little background about, not necessarily about the BPD, but just about you in general. Just like give us a bio.
My bio? Okay. I'm 27 years old. I grew up in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I've been an athlete my entire life. I've played soccer since I can walk, and I have a good family. My parents are divorced, mm-hmm. and
me too.
Cool. That's awesome. Divorced yeah. fam. Awesome. And I have graduated from Randolph-Macon with a degree in psychology.
Okay.
So I kind of got both sides of this.
Awesome. So before we get into your personal story, can you kind of, for our listeners, define BPD for those who might not necessarily know what it is?
So borderline personality, BPD, it is an emotion dysfunction disorder, and it is not necessarily a chemical imbalance in your brain. It is based off of your environment. It is a combination of genetics. It's a combination of trauma, and people compare it a lot to bipolar disorder. Which it's real. They sound similar because it's mm-hmm. a mood thing, but they're very yeah. different at the same time.
Okay, so before you were diagnosed with it, and before you went through the lows of the lows, kind of talk about your perception of, depression, mental health before all of this stuff hit the fan.
I actually, before everything happened, I had no interest in mental health. I didn't even care. I was, when my mental health happened, I was 16. Mm-hmm. So up until then, I didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what borderline was. Mm-hmm. So when everything happened, I felt like I got hit by a train.
Right. So what kind of triggered that avalanche effect of, you going into your, depression and things. So talk about how that happened.
So the big tipping point, I feel, first of all, most of my life, I've kind of felt isolated. I've been very shy, very reserved, and I would be kind of concerned to try new things because I would be scared of being rejected. And that's mm-hmm. a big part of BPD is having that fear of rejection.
Well, and I feel like even if everyone's, I'm super terrified of rejection.
It's like
rejection is not a good feeling, no matter what.
It's like a new level of rejection. Oh yeah, rejection God. Is terrible, but it's rejection to the point that I don't try new things. I remember my dad tells me this story all the time that when I was doing martial arts, mm-hmm. and I would sit in his car crying because I didn't know how to do anything, and it was my first lesson. Mm-hmm. And I was crying to the point that I could not move. So I always felt like it was gradual, but it really hit a tip when I was 16 years old, mm-hmm. and when I was trying to come to terms with my sexuality as a lesbian. Mm-hmm. During that time, this is when MySpace was around, so this is how old the story is. My top MySpace. 8 was thriving. And that
caused so many fights.
It really
with your
did.
Friends.
That wasn't the tipping point, though. I came home from soccer practice or school one day, and my mom found out that I am a lesbian, or I was questioning my sexuality at the time, and I love my mom so much, and during this time, she was not that accepting, at all. She said some things that I won't go into great detail, but it caused me to really have that self-doubt, that mm-hmm. rejection, that
question
shame.
Yourself, yeah.
Yeah, and at being, 16, I'm already questioning everything.
Yeah.
So I started to hurt myself, and I started to cut myself, and I started to burn myself. I never smoked cigarettes, but I was the ashtray for them, and I was really starting to have these big emotional feelings of just shame, sadness, guilt, and anger. My anger mm-hmm. was so bad during that time.
So it's like each emotion you felt you felt it to the most extreme extent.
So compare borderline feelings to third degree burns.
Right.
So like the slightest touch will hurt you. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing. If I get rejected or if I get invalidated, mm-hmm. it is so painful.
God, I can't even imagine.
It's not, it's great. But during that time, yes, my mom and I started to argue. We started to butt heads based off of the sexuality thing. And it was to the point that I was hurting myself, to the point that I would kind of run away to my dad's house. And even though my dad was very supportive at the time, I felt like he was going to leave me too. Mm-hmm. And with borderline, having people are going to leave you and we will do anything, frantic efforts to keep that person in our lives. Mm-hmm. And even if it's made up in our head.
Right.
So I kind of was kind of pushing my dad away. I was pushing everybody away, even the people that were supporting me. And I was hurting myself. I started to isolate. I started to be depressed. My grades started to fall. And me playing soccer, that was like in the back of my mind. And that was my passion.
Mm-hmm.
One day my dad actually saw me hurting myself. And he said, I had enough of this. We're going to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to Mary Washington Hospital up in Fredericksburg, Virginia. They told my dad that I needed to be admitted to a psych ward. And they gave him the option of being inpatient or outpatient. And I thank him to this day for putting me in outpatient.
And for those that don't know, inpatient is when you're in that unit, you're sleeping there, you're eating there, you're receiving intense treatment all day long into the evening, and you don't get to go home, you don't get to sleep in your own bed, you have nurses and doctors monitoring you. Outpatient, you're still at that facility for most of the day, but you get to go home and sleep in your own bed.
Yep. So I was there Monday through Fridays. During school hours, so I would get there around 7:30 in the morning, and then I would leave around maybe 4 o'clock. And my schoolwork would be sent to me from high school, so I would have a block to do my schoolwork to catch up so I don't fall behind.
So talk about high school for a second. I mean, high school sucks for your average person.
Yep.
I mean, you have all these, like, hormones and emotions, and so-and-so likes me, and so-and-so hates me, and on top of going through what you went through and trying to navigate your sexuality and being in a small southern town, talk about the bullying and like the impact that also had on you.
So when it came to my sexuality, I did get a little bit of bullying from that. I actually got the bullying from middle school because mm-hmm. they made up a rumor that I was a lesbian. Yeah. And I was like, ha,
middle schoolers are so mean.
It was actually like really funny foreshadowing. But, so
like, oh, yeah, guys, okay.
It's like, you were right. So I did get bullied a little bit in middle school, and in high school, I definitely did get rejected by some, but I was still questioning my sexuality. I was in this household of knowing that being with a guy is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would date guys, but I was always like being attracted to a female.
Right.
So it was more of an internal conflict, and when I would open up to someone, I did get rejected, and that did cause a lot of big feelings inside of mm-hmm. me. So my sexuality during this time was actually kind of quiet. But when it came to my mental health and everything coming to a head, it was just like, cat's out of the bag at this point.
Right. And then you told me before this, they called you Crazy Katie when they found out.
When I did go off to Snowden, the psychiatric hospital in Fredericksburg, for the day programs for a whole month, and they're going to find out where I am. I'm gone for a whole month.
Oh, and when people talk, and especially, so this was when social media was just being born. You know, we talked about MySpace. Texting was a thing. Yep. Like, I remember having my little flip phone out, you know, texting. I could look at the teacher and text at the same time.
Oh, yes.
I mean, word travels. Uh-huh. And rumors get made up. And, you know, it's hard to keep something like that, like, contained because you just can't.
Yeah.
Kids talk.
Absolutely. So from what I understood is that a couple of my teammates knew.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess somebody asked them, and they said, oh, Katie's gone away for a while. She's just at the doctor's. And they kind of turned it into, oh, Katie's at the crazy house.
Yeah.
So she's crazy now, right? Oh, we should just call her Crazy Katie.
Crazy
and that's
Katie.
How the name became.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. Kids are so cruel.
Kids suck.
So once you finished your, it was 4 weeks, right?
It was about 4 weeks, and a half-ish, yeah.
Okay, so what happened after that?
So after I got discharged from the hospital, I kind of was put back in that same environment mm-hmm. of that constant rejection and that invalidation. And I was only able to see my dad on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt safe there.
Mm-hmm.
it was just constant. And honestly, from the hospital, I didn't care. I didn't know what borderline was. They said I had borderline traits. They said I was depressed. They slapped me with medicine. I didn't care. I thought I was on vacation from school.
Right. Yeah. You're like, I'm out, whatever.
Yeah, peace out.
Yeah, y'all have fun.
I didn't take any responsibility.
So would you say that before being hospitalized was your lowest of lows? Or did your lowest come after that?
Honestly, that's hard to say because even me growing as a person, I still have really bad lows. Mm-hmm. I think my lowest of the low wasn't the hospital, but it was in college. So when I was in college, my mental illness came with me. It didn't stay at home in Fredericksburg. I went to Randolph-Macon. Yeah, it decided to come along with us. And my lowest of lows was when my cousin came up to live with my mom and I felt safe going home. My cousin, she was 4 months older than me. She was my best friend and the person I was able to tell everything to.
Right.
So I was 20 at the time. And so she was just turned 21. And we were able to talk. And she's like, I always knew that you were gay. What's going on? Like, why are you rejecting all your friends? Why are you pushing everyone away? Don't push me away. You're not going to push me away. And I didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to talk about what was going on inside of me, not just my sexuality.
Right.
So my cousin ended up getting really sick. And then a couple months later, my cousin actually passed away at the age of 21. And that was my lowest of low because another person left me.
Right.
And, I mean, out of my control.
Well, yeah, and you probably didn't know at the time, like, how to deal with it.
No,
you know? Like, you're, this is, like, somebody that you... So for those that don't know, we are also recording this for Katie's YouTube channel. And now it looks like I'm stripping because I'm taking my sweatshirt off.
It's okay. It looks like the battery's going to die soon.
Oh, good.
So fantastic.
So after your cousin passed away... How did that, so, and especially you said that, you know, you feel these, like, intense emotions. What was that like? And how did you, for other people that may have this disorder and that may experience someone close to them passing away, how did you manage that?
I couldn't. I was still hurting myself during this time. Even though I was discharged from the hospital, I was still hurting myself up until this point, basically. And it was to the point that I wanted to kill myself. I was highly thinking about it. I didn't want to be here. I felt like a burden. I just wanted to be with my cousin because that was the person that accepted me the most and supported me the most, which I know is not true because everybody supported me. But it was the most painful loss. It was actually one of my first losses I've ever had.
Yeah.
So I felt like I didn't know how to live anymore. I couldn't be without my one of my favorite people.
Right.
So I wanted to go and kill myself.
Like, and be with that person.
And be with my friend again. And be with my cousin. And be with that my safe person. I was crying in the middle of my apartment. And I was... My roommates left. They didn't want to deal with me. They just, like, peaced out.
Right.
And I was crying. I was hysterical. I was hurting myself. And then there's a moment in recovery that we call an aha moment. And I don't know what it was. We could say that it's my cousin coming back to say, hey, get your life together.
Yeah.
But it was to the point that I don't want to feel like this anymore. I'm tired of being angry. I'm tired of fighting people. I'm tired of hurting myself. I need to put my foot down and actually, instead of blaming other people and take my personal responsibility in my own health. So I ended up remembering that borderline in the back of my head. And I Googled it. And
don't you love Google?
I love Google.
You can Google anything you want, and it will give you an answer.
Basically, I just Googled borderline personality, Henrico, Virginia, because that's where I was living at the time, and I said therapist, and I clicked enter, and I clicked the first link that I had, and that is the therapist that I still have until this day.
Really?
Yep. 6 years later.
Wow.
That is my therapist. If she's moving, I'm going with her because that's my girl.
Peace out, Richmond.
Bye.
That's awesome, though. So you're a huge advocate for therapy, then.
Absolutely. Yeah. It changed my life. It saved my life. Absolutely.
Yeah. So once you started going to therapy, what were some things that your therapist told you to do in order to kind of cope with what it is that you're going through?
Well, she first enrolled me in DBT, Dialectical Behavior Therapy. And with DBT, I'm going to say DBT. With DBT,
it's a mouthful.
I know, it's a lot. It is intensive psychotherapy for people that have extreme emotions, people that experience flashbacks like PTSD and BPD, and people that have really high, like, mood disorders.
Right.
And it teaches you these skills to kind of regulate your emotions, kind of take a step back and think before you talk and try to assess the situation and see if your emotions fit the facts. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of work. There was homework involved. I graduated college. I didn't want to do any more homework.
Yeah, you're done.
I was done with it. I still, even though I had my feet wet with my recovery, I still was scared to put in that work.
So it's kind of like you were learning whether or not you had ground to stand on when you felt the way you felt about a situation. So, am I really pissed off that Susie threw my shirt on the floor? Or, like, was it worth more just, like, picking the shirt up and, like, taking it to the laundry? You know what I mean? Like, you really have to work to, like, assess different situations.
Kind of, yes. And, of course, like, if Susie threw my shirt on the floor, yeah, I'd be mad, but is the severity worth it?
Right.
So it's more of taking that step back, assessing the situation, and kind of proceeding mindfully with it.
Right, right. So what is your opinion then for BPD and somebody who, you know, may also be going through the early stages of it? What is your opinion on medication?
Medication is symptom management. I took Zoloft for 4 years, and I got off of it the beginning of my sophomore year of college. I don't take medication now, but I have learned the skills to cope with my symptoms.
Right.
So if somebody who is kind of struggling in those early times, if medication will help with those symptoms that you kind of struggle with, then do what you need to do.
Right. Like, kind of like dim it down so you can begin to, like, learn the skills to work on yourself.
Right. And then be able to reduce that dosage if you need to. But if you kind of want to have an antidepressant or a mood stabilizer because you feel safe with it, then sure.
So it's not like a one-size-fits-all, like one thing specifically is going to make this better for you.
Right.
There's multiple things.
And that's the same thing with any mental illness, is that you have to have, it's everything about recovery is your symptom management, because your symptoms don't go away.
No.
So I still have those thoughts of hurting myself, and I still have those thoughts of suicide, and I know how to cope with it. And I don't need medication to cope with it.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like I do, but I know I have the skills to do it.
I think sometimes we all feel like we need a little medication to cope with things. That's for sure. So before we started this, you were talking about, let's like backtrack way back to when you were in high school and you were cutting. You said earlier, and this really stuck out to me, that there's two types of cutting. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
So people get that stereotype that people that cut themselves do it for attention. Mm-hmm. And some people do. I'm not going to give the benefit of the doubt.
Like, right.
People cut themselves to get that reaction. The other side of it, people cut themselves because they don't know how to handle that intense emotion, and numbing it out by causing physical pain will make that feeling decrease. So that's really the reason why I cut myself. And the other reason why I would cut myself is that I want people to know that I'm really hurting. Like, I can't vocalize it.
Right.
So I'm going to do it in a way that I'm able to get that emotion out.
Right.
And it's not for attention. It's not to say, hey, you're not coming over, I'm going to hurt myself. It's not like that.
Right.
And people need to notice that stereotype that stigma that people don't cut themselves just for attention.
Right. And they don't do it just because, like, they're trying to, like, bribe you to do something.
Right. It's not a fad. Nothing like that.
So we also, or you, I shouldn't say we, you put questions out there for people on Instagram and Twitter. So one of the first questions we got was, what is the biggest struggle socially for you? And I know the social aspect of things for anybody dealing with a mental health disorder or just with mental health issues in general, I mean, I have horrible anxiety, and I could not tell you, well, actually, I could pinpoint where it started. But sometimes, like, I'll walk into a room or like a building or an entity, and I immediately want to walk right back out just because I can't. Like Trader Joe's, for example. I cannot grocery shop at Trader Joe's because the aisles are too small.
It's expensive.
I know. Well, that too. My wallet can't handle it. But no, but it's because all the people, and I physically, I remember one time my ex-boyfriend and I went in, and, you know, he's, like, looking around shopping, and I'm standing at the door. And he looked at me, and he's like, "Mary Paige, what are you doing?" And I'm like, I can't be in here. Like, this is too much. So, what, and, like, going downtown, like, going out to clubbing downtown, I can't do it.
because there's so, because you're shoulder to shoulder, and people that I don't know are like sweating on me and
people
touching me.
People are sweating, get drinks spilt on you.
Yeah, and I'm not about that. Like, I want to be at like a bar that's got some live music and I can sit and chill and have like my bubble. That's so totally talk about like social struggles that you have with this.
So I don't necessarily have social anxiety. I mean, I feel like at first I was very anxious to be around people just because I was scared of that rejection. Now I'm very fearless when it comes to that.
I was going to say, you are, and you're the one that reached out to me. You were like, my friend Rachel told me about you. I would love, yeah, thank you, Rachel. You're like, I would love to come on. Let's collaborate. I'm excited. We'll put this on my YouTube channel. And I'm like, holy shit, this chick's awesome. Like, I can't wait to talk to her.
I can tell you straight up, if this was me about 2 years ago, I would never hit you up.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I've been at, we'll get to my job in a second, but I've been doing my recovery speech for 2 years now. So when it comes to me being in a social environment, I was a bartender. I've been around people. I've been around all types of people.
Right.
I also work at a mental hospital now. I've been around everyone. For me personally, it's hard for me to be in a social environment when I just don't want to be there.
Right.
And I struggle with telling my friends that I don't want to be there because I don't want them to be, oh, you don't want to come, you don't want to hang out with us,
yeah, like,
you don't
like
us.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that rejection would really, really hurt me. And that invalidation really hurt me. So the thing I struggle with the most is telling someone no about in a social environment. Like, no, I don't really want to go. I've gotten a lot better at it.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've gotten better at it, but I still feel those intense emotions of like guilt and shame.
Oh, God.
Just staying at home.
Yeah.
So that's what I really struggle with the most.
Yeah. So the next question would be, what grounds you the most? So what do you do on a day-to-day basis that balances you? Like we talked earlier about like mindfulness. Like what keeps you mindful and what keeps you, you know, from feeling, you know, the intense of the intense and, you know, the highs and the lows? Like what do you do that works for you?
So in DBT, we learn a lot of distress tolerance skills. So if I'm in a situation where my emotions are on 1,000 and I'm angry, I'm smashing things, I want to hurt myself. And I'll tell you, in November, I got so angry that I punched a wall. Big old scar on my knuckle.
Oh my God.
And that, I'm saying that recovery is not linear.
Right.
So
no,
I'm going to make
not.
Mistakes. But what grounds me is I try to work out four times a week, 3 to 4 times a week. And being in the gym, turning on my headphones, and just drowning everything out around me and focusing on lifting weights, that really keeps me grounded.
Right.
Now, if I can't go to the gym, I have to use my distress tolerance skills.
And I knew we were going to get along so good when I found out you went to the gym. Like, I'm sitting here so sweaty because I just left the gym. She probably hates sitting next to me, but I think that a lot of people, you know, have that outlet of working out or going on a walk or going on a run or doing some type of physical activity. One of my favorite quotes in the entire world is, you never feel guilty after a workout.
Oh,
you
no.
always feel amazing, like you're on top of the world. So that makes me really happy to hear you say that, you know, working out is something that just like boosts everything for you.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's freaking awesome.
And I do go on walks. The sun, it releases vitamin D in your body. It helps release that serotonin.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just going outside for 30 minutes will boost your mood just by science.
Just by science.
Just by science.
It's fact.
Science.
It's fact. So what do you, you know what, I'm going to get to that question after my next two questions. So what would you say to somebody who has just figured out that they have BPD and maybe trying to figure out what to do about it, how to navigate it, like what the next step should be?
First and foremost, it's okay. It is okay to have BPD. It is okay to have any mental illness. Please know that your emotions are valid. And yeah, the intensity may not be as valid, but there's a reason behind what you feel. It is okay to go talk to someone about it. You need that outlet or you're going to put it on yourself. You're
going to drive yourself crazy.
You're going to drive yourself, not necessarily crazy, but you'll push people away.
Right.
Because you don't know how to keep it regulated.
Right. And this next question leads up to, so I have a friend who has BPD. I'm not going to say her name because I'm not sure how cool she is with, you know, everybody knowing. We were friends in high school, really good friends in high school. And she started to battle with her, you know, depression and BPD and a mix of other things. And I remember thinking, because I had not gone through
any type of mental health battle before.
Right.
And I didn't start going through my own until college. So I remember thinking, like, she's so overdramatic. She, you know, why is she so angry all the time? She's just being moody. You know, familiar. Yeah. I mean, and I feel like an asshole, you know, especially ever since I've been going through what I've been going through and then talking to all of these other people, I really feel like a cold, hard bitch for making these assumptions and just thinking like, oh, why can't you just snap out of it? Like, life is what you make it. Like, just get out of bed. Like, smile. Put a smile on.
That person
on,
should
like,
not be in your life anymore.
No.
Just saying. The person is not open-minded to understanding how another person feels. Yeah. That person needs
and
to be
it
out.
Wasn't, and it wasn't until, like I said, like, I started, like, realizing what, you know, these different types of things were that I started feeling of some type of way in college. I was like, damn. Like, this is real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, what would you say to me?
Okay.
10 years ago. Be nice.
10 years? Me 10 years ago or
no,
you 10
what
years
would
ago?
You, so what would
me
you
10
say,
years ago would be a disaster.
So what would you say? So let's say you have somebody come in and they've got BPD.
Okay.
And they have a family member or a friend with them. And the friend or the family member is just not grasping the concept. And they're just not seeing, like, what is going on. Like, they're not looking at the bigger picture.
Okay.
They're looking in the now. Like, what would you say to them to make them understand?
Educate, educate, educate. If that means you have to sit down and say, this is, like, have a graph or a chart and say, this is what this is. I need you to help, like, support me in these certain ways. And you have to be specific. This is advocating for yourself and your needs. If that person doesn't understand and continues not to understand, we can't force that.
Right.
So we have to take it upon ourselves to have a key to our own happiness. We can't rely on other people to understand necessarily.
Right.
And that's the same thing going back to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make a side note. My mom did say that she loves me and that she does accept me. And she just wants me to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is that I was going to be happy with or without my mom's love.
Right.
So it was hard to cut those ties, but you might need to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't cut ties with my mom. I didn't.
She's very much in the picture. Hey, mom. Yeah, I mean, I think that's great advice. And I think that, you know, I'm in the addiction and recovery field. So, and that's a lot of, you know, when people...
You're getting distracted by these cats.
I know. So she's got 3 cats. My cousin... So all of my cousins...
Stereotypical lesbian.
So funny. All of my cousins are such huge cat people. And they... Samantha, Hannah, Patty, you guys would die right now. They are... Oh my gosh, they're
Come
so
over,
adorable.
Babysit, please.
Yeah. But anyway... Where was I? Now I totally lost my train of thought, which goes back to our ADHD episode yesterday.
You were in the addiction field.
I'm in the addiction field. And so what we see a lot is, you know, somebody is early in their recovery and the family members and the friends don't know how to deal with it. So I think that that's great advice. You know, cut ties. And then if they come back, they come back.
If a person is not going to be able to be supportive for you, especially in that really critical, sensitive, vulnerable time, that person should not be around. Not maybe not completely gone, but maybe push to the sideline for a second. And then maybe once you start to recover a little bit more, you gain those skills that you need to have, maybe you could bring that person in and say, hey, you remember that one time?
Right.
Look at me now. Look how much I've grown.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is why you need to understand that I'm still a normal person. I'm still a human.
I'm still me. Yeah.
I'm not my disorder. I am not my addiction. I'm not BPD. I'm Katie.
Right.
I'm Katie that loves soccer. I love to work out. I love my cats. And yeah, I have an anger problem that's called borderline personality. So.
That is just a little piece there.
Yeah, it's just a little part of me.
Also, for those who don't know, Katie is a certified peer support specialist.
Yes.
A recovery coach.
Basically, yeah, we can call it that.
Recovery coach.
But I do have my certification for that.
So that's why she sounds so freaking awesome when she's talking about all this, because she talks to people about it all the time.
All
so we have like a professional and a real life person here talking about it. So another thing that I want to know from you is, what do you recommend people do, you know, now that, especially since you've said that this is an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like, you know, drug addiction where you don't do that drug anymore. I mean, this is something that you're going to live with essentially for the rest of your life. So what do you recommend people do to navigate through life with this?
So I'm going to I'm gonna criticize you for a second.
Okay.
But when it comes to addiction,
please do. I will. I don't know.
I got you. Fantastic. Hold on. Well, fantastic. YouTube has stopped. We stopped there. When it comes to addiction, yes, you stop doing that drug, but you still have those cravings, right?
Yes.
You still have those symptoms,
right?
And that's the
you
same.
You deal with the ups and the downs, and I want to go get high today. I want to go drink. Yeah,
right. So that's the same thing with mental health: is that you still feel those symptoms. Mm-hmm. Those symptoms don't necessarily go away. You just learn how to cope with it. So you're going to mess up, mm-hmm. and that's what I tell my patients. I'm like, you're going to mess up, and you have to realize that that is not necessarily a step back, but that's mm-hmm. a step back to go forward.
Right.
That is a learning experience for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can say is that recovery is non-linear.
Linear. That means it doesn't go in a line.
It doesn't go in a straight line. It's not saying I'm in recovery and everything is great after that.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I'm going to have to roll with the punches. I'm going to have to hit speed bumps and I'm going to have to cope with it a different way than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be uncomfortable to grow as a person.
Right.
And
you do.
If I am hit with a situation where I get really intense emotions and I want to hurt myself, being comfortable is me hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to do something different for me to grow.
Right?
Yep. I have to be put myself in a really uncomfortable situation for me to deal with those emotions, because emotions are temporary and emotions are okay.
Right. That's an awesome answer. And then what do you wish that people knew about BPD at all times?
I wish people knew that there's a reason why we may have a reaction to the way that we do. There is a reason behind the way that we feel. It may not be the most appropriate reaction, and we need to be able to respond to that situation a little bit better, but there's always a reason behind it. It's not just flying off the handle
right.
for no reason.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you. And then one thing that we started episode 2, and now we're at 4, I want you to give all of the people listening here today, a challenge. So whether that is, you know, go out and tell someone about BPD, or if you have BPD, like, you know, just give your listeners something that they can do to raise awareness and reduce the stigma of BPD.
Ooh, that's a tough question. Dang, I didn't even think
about
it. So, yeah, you did. Okay. when it comes to BPD, not many people are going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So if I can challenge people, I would say be kind to everyone that you come in contact with, because you never know what's going on with that mm-hmm. person. That person may have BPD. That person may be completely fine. That person right. may have anxiety. You never know. Yeah, they're arguing, aren't they? my challenge is to go out in the community and genuinely ask, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Try to read that person's emotions off their face. Your face is going to tell you the emotion before them even speaking.
Right.
That is my challenge. Try to read people's emotions.
I think that's awesome. So before we wrap things up, is there anything that you want to tell your audience?
Dang.
Speak now or forever hold your podcast peace.
Okay. I know I talk a lot about mental health on my Instagram and on my social media. If you guys ever, ever, ever have any issues, please reach out to someone. Reach out to somebody who is safe, somebody who knows what they're talking about. Reach out to somebody that you trust. And knowing that mental illness can happen to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 in 4 now. 1 in 4 Americans suffer from a mental illness
Absolutely.
In a year.
Absolutely, I believe it.
And so anybody can have a mental illness, but everybody can recover. And that is my piece of advice for everyone, is that it is possible. You just have to put in the damn work to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth it. It saved my life.
Yeah.
Really did.
That was really deep.
Thanks.
I liked it.
Thank you.
I liked it a lot. So wrapping things up with Katie. Katie, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate Rachel, if you're listening, for hooking me up with Katie.
Thanks, Rachie.
I really appreciate that. It's awesome to know that, you know, what I'm trying to do is so supported by people, not only in the mental health and recovery community, but outside of the community as well. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for being so vulnerable and telling your story.
Of course.
As always, you are loved, you are enough, and you are exactly where you are meant to be. Next week, I will have my good friend, Katie, come on.
Wait, I'm already
and,
here.
Right? Two Katies in a row. You guys are so special. And you guys are so lucky that you get to hear both of these stories. I have a good friend, Katie, coming on, and we're going to be talking about situational mental health. So basically, what that means is she's going to come on and talk about a very hard time in her life, how that affected her mental health, and how she bounced back from it. So hopefully you guys tune in. My name is Mary Page.
Oh, and I'm Katie.
And this is Katie. Woo-hoo! So thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time.